But last week we wrapped up our Jesus series. So if you missed it, it's on the podcast. And we're entering into 7 weeks of looking at some core tenets of Quaker faith. Oftentimes we'll do the spices, you know, simplicity, peace, integrity, community, equality, stewardship. But this time, we've mixed it up. It's very exciting. I need to stick to my script, clearly. I don't know about you, but sometimes when I share with people that I'm meeting for the first time that I'm a Quaker, there's a few stock responses. And I want you to be thinking of yours in case I don't cover it, because I'm going to invite you to share. One is, oh, I thought Quakers died out a long time ago. Nope, I'm still alive. Like, right? I just told you I'm a Quaker. But you drive a car? Confusing us with the Amish. And then the third one is, oh, but you wear clothing more colorful than gray. Although I am. How about the rest of you? What is a response you've gotten when you've shared that you're a Quaker? Anyone? Yeah, Candace? Where's the oatmeal? Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah?
Do you have to keep your hair braided?
Do you have to keep your hair braided?
No.
Anyone else? Yeah, Lisa?
On a different kind of path, it's like, oh, you're okay then. You're not one of those Christians. I mean, it's...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So it's like a positive.
It's okay to be a Quaker.
Mm-hmm. If you're Quaker, okay. Yeah, Larry?
I get bored. Oh, what do they believe?
Oh, okay.
They just don't know.
Yeah, just complete ignorance about Quakers in general. Okay, very good. Well, I think it's important to remember our history and how this particular group of people came to be. You know, how Quakers came to be, but more importantly, to look at what makes Quakers Quaker and examine it and bring it to the light and ask, is this still what faithfulness looks like? Does this describe us today? Is Christ calling us to continue in this vein, or was that for a specific time and setting? Are there ways in which some of these Quaker tenets are still desperately needed today in the world? So before we launch into George Fox's conversion moment, I want to take your attention to the tapestry up here, which is our theme slide. It's also on your bulletin. This image is one of 77 Quaker tapestries. Now, I didn't know this. I thought these tapestries had been around for hundreds of years, but no, this is very new. The Quaker tapestry came into being in 1981. An 11-year-old boy was attending a small Quaker meeting in Somerset, England. Jonathan Stocks was the only child his age at Ann Wynne Wilson's children's class, who apparently Ed has met and she has stayed in his home. Ann had the idea of creating a mural in their classroom to tell some of the stories of early friends. And after telling these stories, she asked the children to draw them and color them in, so they were coloring. Anne wanted to brighten up the children's room. Jonathan, however, had felt that he had plenty of practice coloring pictures of Bible stories on Sunday mornings, and he wanted to do something different. He suggested making a collage or mosaic, and soon he and Anne had progressed onto the idea of a tapestry. Enthusiasm for the project spread, and eventually more than 4,000 men, women, and children in 15 countries had a hand in the creation of the Quaker tapestry. Many folks didn't know anything about embroidery. However, the core 300 or so embroiderers who carried out the main part of the work enabled them to put in at least a few stitches. So this is a conglomeration of many skills and abilities. The tapestry tells of Quaker events and insights and is a celebration of the significant contribution made. These span from the 17th century to the present day. Stories from the forefront of the Industrial Revolution, developments in science and medicine, astronomy, the abolition of slavery, social reform, and ecology are all revealed from within this stunning needlework. Finally completed in 1996, the result is 77 panels of narrative crewel embroidery on woven cloth. Anne even inadvertently invented a brand new stitch, now called the Quaker Stitch, after the project. In 1994, the tapestry found a permanent home at the Quaker Meeting House in Kendal, Cumbria, in England. How cool is that? I totally thought these were really old.
Nope,
brand new. We'll have a Quaker tapestry, hopefully, for every week of our series. Okay, so let's set the stage for our George Fox history lesson. For many of you, you'll know this and probably can do it better. But for also many of you, this will be brand new, which is why we talk about it every so often. So, George Fox is in England in the 1600s. He was born in July of 1624, so that was almost exactly 400 years ago. The English Civil War began in 1642. George Fox is 18 years old. That war lasts 9 years. Then, just 11 years later, in 1653, Fox is almost 30, a military dictatorship under Oliver Cromwell begins. At the time, religiously, church attendance is mandatory, and the Church of England begins in the 1600s during the Reformation. George Fox was born in Leicestershire. That makes a lot of sense. He says in his journal that his dad was a weaver, an honest man, and a seed of God was in him, and his mother was an upright woman. From page 66 in his journal, he describes part of his childhood. Side note, in Fox's journals, he refers consistently to man when it's to be inclusive of all genders. So I have left his writing intact, so it does refer to man, but it's everybody. When I came to 11 years of age, I knew pureness and righteousness, for while I was a child, I was taught how to walk to be kept pure. The Lord taught me to be faithful in all things and to act faithfully two ways, inwardly to God and outwardly to man, and to keep yea and nay in all things. For the Lord showed me that though the people of the world have mouths full of deceit and changeable words, yet I was to keep yea and nay in all things, and that my words should be few and savory, seasoned with grace, and that I might not eat and drink to make myself wanton, but for health, using the creatures in their service as servant in their places, to the glory of him that created them, end quote. So we see this household that Fox grows up in, where honesty is a high value. To let your words be honest and true all the time. To let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. Yes and no. I love the statement to be faithful in two ways, both inwardly to God and outwardly to people. I think that's one of the best definitions of integrity I know of. And he apparently is surrounded by people who overeat or drink too much. And Fox is clear to say he eats and drinks for the health of his body or to fuel it, to thank the creatures that are on earth and consume them. As he grew up, some folks thought he should be a priest, but he was sent to work with a shoemaker. And at 20, he says he was tempted to despair. And I take this to mean he was severely depressed. He also kept checking in with himself, continually trying to find out if he had sinned. He describes being in this condition in great trouble for some years. He went to many priests looking for comfort, but found no comfort there. His family suggested that he get married, and he explained he was just a lad and needed some wisdom. Others told him he should join the war effort, as the English Civil War was at its peak. He traveled around for years and spent some time at home, and of this time he describes walking alone at night in great sorrow and trouble. He would meet with a priest and ask spiritual questions throughout the week, only to hear the sermon on Sunday based on all the questions that he had asked the priest earlier. He went to another priest who recommended to him to smoke tobacco and sing psalms. This priest also told all of his own servants all of George Fox's troubles and sorrows, gossiping about him. George Fox also shares that he walked 7 miles to seek out another priest and found him to be an empty, hollow cask. I get this just deep searching, looking, not even really sure what he's looking for. And at 23, after spending at least 3 years in deep sorrow and searching and seeking, from George Fox's journal, he says, "I have forsaken the priests and preachers and those esteemed the most experienced people, for I saw there was none among them that could speak to my condition. And when all my hopes in them and in all men were gone, so that I had nothing outwardly to help me, nor could I tell what to do, then, oh then, I heard a voice which said, 'There is one, even Christ Jesus, that can speak to thy condition.' And when I heard it, my heart did leap for joy." So George Fox is going all around seeking advice from people, trusted people and priests. They give him random things to try, from bloodletting to smoking to drinking, and it seems he's at his lowest point, that all his hope in people and their advice was gone, and no one could help him. And he hears directly from Jesus, that Jesus can speak directly to his condition. At that time in the 1600s, this was revolutionary. Lay people could only speak to God through the priest, never on their own. That's absurd. And in fact, that idea and many others of early friends is what landed them in jail time and time again for these radical thoughts, like you could speak to Jesus on your own. Fox goes on to say that he had read the scriptures continuously. He knew the scriptures, but did not know Jesus until this moment. He says, when I myself was in the deep, shut up under all, I could not believe that I should overcome. My troubles, my sorrows, my temptations were so great that I thought many times I should have despaired. I was so tempted. But when Christ opened to me how he was tempted by the same devil and overcame him and bruised his head, and that through him and his power, light, grace, and spirit, I should overcome also, I had confidence in him. So he it was that opened to me when I was shut up and had no hope or faith. Christ, who had enlightened me, gave me his light to believe in. He gave me hope, which he himself revealed in me, and he gave me his spirit and grace, which I found sufficient in the deeps and in weakness. Which I found sufficient in the deep. I don't know about you, but when I read this description from Fox, I am quickly brought back to my high school days, where I was convinced of my evilness. That no matter how hard I tried, I was unworthy and failing at living a righteous life. I look back on that girl, and I'm filled with such love and grace for my younger self, because I was super responsible, honest, follow the rules kind of girl. Like, I look back on me and think, how in the world did I think I was so evil? But I was convinced. I was sure there was no way that God could love me. I remember a similar point to Fox when I had my moment of conversion or moment of hope from Christ. That God offered a lifeline. God's love was poured out on me, and I knew deeply that God loved me right where I was. That nothing I could do could ever change that, good or bad. There was truly no thing that could separate me from the love of God. God's love and God's Spirit is available to each and every one of us. This is why, and not to take another week because we are going to talk about this, but this is why early friends talked quite a bit about perfection. The idea that we can achieve perfection if we live by the Spirit. Because if the living and active power of God is alive and available to all of us, then we can achieve perfection. That's why Colin pointed out several weeks ago about how early friends performed many miracles and healed people. Because that same living light of Christ was and is accessible. And early friends really took to heart that with God, all things are possible. Friends, this is a message I think we need today. 2 Corinthians 4:6 says, "For it is the God who said, 'Let light shine out of darkness,' who has shown in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ." So when I take out this tenet of Quaker faith, this conversion moment that started Quakers, and I examine it and think, is this still applicable? Is this a message that the world needs to hear? Yes. We need light shining out of the darkness. And we all have our part to do by being those light bearers. That as we go throughout our days, going to work, going to school, eating lunch with our friends, trying to walk with Jesus, being faithful means allowing Christ's light to shine through us, to flow through us. To be reminded that the only way to drive out hate is to love. Fox's journal shares about this moment of conversion. "I saw that there was an ocean of death and darkness, but an infinite ocean of light and love, which flowed over the ocean of darkness. In that also I saw the infinite love of God, and I had great openings." God's infinite ocean of light and love is there for each and every one of us. For you and for me, for every person. So friends, let's go into a time together in the infinite ocean of light and love, and pray and listen to Jesus, our present teacher. And if you feel like God has given you a word or a message,